Episode 4 here with the one and only Dane DeAllegro. Dane, why don't you say hi to the folks out there?
What's going on, everyone?
Dane is coming to us from Italy.
Six hour
time difference. So you went to school with Ben Kranka, correct?
Yes, Worcester Academy, Hilltoppers.
Worcester, nice. You guys quite an alumni, I think, those last couple of years. Who else is there? Billy Barron?
Yep, that's right. We got Jarrett Jack, Craig Smith. Who else?
Was Tyler Olander there too for like a semester?
I don't know. Actually, I have a funny Tyler Olander story. He scratched me on my neck when we played UConn my senior year. The scar is still there. So every time I look in the mirror, I see the scar on my neck. I think of Tyler Olander. I don't know if he went to Worcester Academy.
I'll make sure to let him know. Oh God. So we got.
Yeah. Probably doesn't remember me.
We got quite a bit to talk about. I wanted to start with, you know, your overseas career. I know you have, you know, quite a few different passports, and you played in quite a few countries. So why don't you give me the rundown there since graduation?
From UNH. Well, I played in the Maccabi games in 2009. I think that was in between my freshman. No, that was in between my sophomore and junior year. So that's like the Jewish Olympics. It's like the third biggest sporting event in the world.
I played it in 2013. No big deal.
Really? Did you? Wait, so you guys won the gold though?
Yeah.
Yeah. They invited me back to go on that team, but like we won the gold. There was no reason. Like I did it. You know, it was like,
the competition wasn't the best either.
No, I mean, it wasn't. It was about the experience. It was about the experience. Exactly. You know, we definitely. I mean, you know, obviously the men's gold team USA, like we were the highlight of the whole thing. But, I mean, you win the gold in Israel, it's, you know, you go to Mount Masada, you do all that stuff. It's great. So anyway, so there's guys on my team who are older, who are out of college, and I'm talking to them and I found out that you can get your passport. If you get another passport from another country, it helps you immensely, with your career post college. So I told my dad about this and we started the 2-year process because he's Italian of getting my Italian passport. And it was a long drawn out. We were like digging through the basement of my grandparents' house, finding, you know, wedding certificates, birth certificates, everything like that to prove, that our family was from Italy and specific people were born in Italy at specific times. Mm-hmm. So I got my passport through that, which is pretty cool. And then I have my Israeli passport as well, which I didn't even have an Israeli passport the year I went to go play there. And I just kind of showed up and then the team kind of got me my passport. I know in order to make Aliyah, which is like Israeli citizen, you have to like go in the army and do all this crazy stuff. I didn't do any of that. I sat in a waiting room for like a couple hours and then I had an Israeli passport. And yeah, that's
like
the end of that story. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't have to go into the Israeli army for a couple of years. That would have been, counterproductive for me.
Would have been tough. So when you got overseas, your first year was in Israel?
No, my first year was in Southern Italy in a small town called Ostuni. Not a lot going on. Didn't sign for too much. And, I was like a deer in headlights. It was just, I couldn't believe that I kept playing. It was like, I'm still playing after college. Like I never, in America East, I never won anything. I never won an accolade. I never was named to any team. I was never anybody. And here I am in Italy. Like there'd just be times I'd just be driving to practice, be like, dude, you're in Italy. What are you doing? Like, this is crazy. And I had a pretty good season. I averaged like 9-7 or something like that. My point guard, led the league in assists, which was great for me, pick and roll. And then just kept going from there. I've just, 7 years later, I'm still playing.
I mean, sometimes it's funny though. America East is a weird league. I mean, sometimes your game can just like you know, with more space at your height, I'm sure, you know, your game probably just translates a little bit better too.
Yeah. I mean, it's America East is kind of like, it's as close to Division Two as it gets in first in Division One. And like, it's funny. I'll like talk to people and they're like, oh, where'd you go to school? Like, I'll be at the line, you know, talking to another guy and they're like, where'd you go to school? I went to UNH, and they're like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, we're Division One. They're like, oh, okay. Yeah. You know? It's strange. You know, a lot of guys you see over here didn't necessarily go to big schools because I feel like the lifestyle overseas in Europe isn't really conducive to the guys that played at Kentucky or can play that, you know, played at SEC schools, big time schools, because a lot of the things that were catered for you when you were in college, it's not existent here. And
such a culture shock for these guys.
Yes. Yeah. Especially guys that were in the league maybe for a year or so and then had to come over here. So that can be maybe an even harder transition.
Definitely.
Yeah. So
that's good though. I mean, a lot of people, I was just thinking too, like it being a big man in the American East is even worse because you probably went against, like, besides playing Vermont, like, you probably went against, like, 6'5 guys. Like, you probably didn't want to
get. Yeah.
Like, you just got double teamed by, like, 2 6'5 guys in the post.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of footers. There weren't a lot of, like, you know, Taylor Coppin rats when I was playing.
No.
But, so it's definitely an adjustment. That's for sure.
Yeah. No. Well. Yeah. Congrats, man. I mean, it's nice to hear you're representing the America East and New Hampshire well.
Yeah, you know what's sad? It's like now when I tell people, oh yeah, I played at UNH America East. They're like, oh, I'm like, they're like, oh, you're in that conference with UMBC, and I'm like, oh my god, no, please.
That makes me cringe. That makes me.
UMBC, like. I used to put UMBC in the mixer, like straight blender. And it's crazy now. They were never good. They were never good. And now they made that run. It's like, it's not, like, okay, say like UVM makes a run in the NCAA tournament. You know, you guys beat Syracuse and all that, da, 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 which my brother was on that team in 05, by the way. I cried that night. That game was in Worcester. And I was sick. Yeah, I was sick. And so like obviously Vermont made, you know, you guys made a name for yourselves with that, but like UMBC, man, come on. It had to be them.
It's a bad, as great of a game as it was, it was a bad look for the America East.
No, for sure. And like, I'm so proud that it's our conference that did it. I'm so proud that, you know, America East, you know, got some limelight. But come on, man. Like, that's crazy. Now forever, it's like, oh, you guys played against UMBC. Like, oh, no. Oh, sheesh.
Yeah, that's brutal. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So let's I know you've been over. So, yeah, as you said, you've been overseas for quite some time now. And I know I follow you a little bit. You know, I see these recipes you post sometimes. So if you want to, enlighten us on your midnightsnackbeast.com. Am I right?
Yes, I think it still exists. The guy who runs the website, like the server and all that, there's been issues. It's been taken down. It's been infected by viruses and stuff, but I think it's still up at this point. So don't
visit it yet until.
You can, it's, I think it's running. You can go check it out if you want. You know, I will say I haven't updated it in maybe like 3 or 4 years. It was a thing. Well, I haven't updated the blog, the actual website. It was just something I started my rookie year. I'd be up late at night because obviously Italy is 6 hours ahead. So it's a lot easier to stay awake at 1, 2, 3, 4 in the morning because everyone you know and love is awake also. So, and I'd just be up late and I'd be hungry and I'm always hungry and I eat for a family of four and I would cook these massive, like, fourth meals essentially, and they would be ridiculous. It would be like a French toast, bacon, triple burger, like mountain. And my brother and my sister, like, why don't you put this on the internet? People would find this interesting. So I do like a little video, a write up about, you know, the recipe and like a really crappy photo shoot with my phone. Like I think I would use the flash in like darkness. There are some of the pictures on there are terrible, but you know, the most important thing is that I was, you know, putting up content and I was doing it once a week and it was interesting and people liked it. Over the years, it got tougher to do it once a week because I was, you know, eating like 4 pounds of potatoes covered in steak, and I would eat like just absurd things that like no one should be eating these things. And so I kind of got away from it. You know, my third year, my then girlfriend moved in with me and I kind of, you know, just got away from it. And then I went to Israel and then I just completely forgot it, but it's kind of transitioned into an Instagram account now. So, a couple of years ago I started the Instagram and I would update it, and I still put stuff up occasionally, but now at this point it's just like my stories on Instagram, my Instagram, which is DD. And, I do my dinners and my lunches and stuff. And I don't really, sometimes I'll talk about the recipe, but it's more just like for show really. But I can still whip. I still get very freaky in the kitchen, you know?
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Definitely give him a follow. Again, that's, I can't believe you got that Instagram, username, just DD. That's amazing.
DD. Yep. Yep. I was going to get D, but it was taken at the time. Now it's not. And maybe I'll make the switch eventually, but, DD, definitely check it out.
So can you give what was your number one, I guess, go-to dish at midnight? Can you give it?
Oh man. Well, I do this thing I refer to as kitchen sink pasta, which is like the athlete's perfect meal, in my opinion. And it's a pound of pasta with chicken or beef. I typically use chicken, like maybe two chicken breasts. And then I take a zucchini. I take a bell pepper. I take an onion. I take two carrots and some peas, and I saute them. And then I cut up, you know, I cook those separately from the chicken. I cut the chicken up, put it on the side, and then I kind of combine everything. And then the sauce can go in any direction. I can do like calabrese, which is like a spicy pepper sauce, or a pesto rosso, which is like more balsamic vinegar. It's kind of darker.
You're making me hungry, man.
So I combine all that. Essentially, it's just vegetables and meat and pasta in this one giant punch bowl with a really good sauce and the right spices. It's just all nutrients, everything a growing body needs in one bowl, and it's delicious. And I could eat that 3 times a week. I've kind of been getting away from pasta the past year or so. But kitchen sink pasta is definitely my go-to if I have company or whatever. It only gets rave reviews. So,
in case anyone listening hasn't figured it out, you know, Dane is a huge foodie, and he was telling me before about what was this butcher shop. If you want to talk about that,
yeah. So I played in Siena 2 years ago, and Siena is in Tuscany, obviously very close to Florence. And my brother visited me one time and he's like, yo, you know, there's this really, really famous butcher shop, like not far from here. Let's go check it out. So I went there and there was the guy who owned it, is this eighth generation butcher. I think the shop was like 250 years old, something like that. And his name's Dario Cecchini, and I think he's the most famous butcher in the world. Bourdain referred to him as the most famous butcher in the world. And so I went there and I met this guy, and he just fell in love with me. And he was like, couldn't believe how strong my hands were. He said I had good butcher hands. So he's like, yeah, when your season's done, like come here and I'll teach you how to debone cows and butcher for free. And then as payment, you work in the restaurant in the afternoon and night. And awesome. I made a lot of friends there. My friend Tommy is the restaurant manager there. That's like kind of my home away from home. I can, you know, I go there for Christmas. I eat Christmas at Dario's every year. it was like a Netflix episode, actually. So we ate in like the cavern of this monastery in the hills of Chianti. It was like, it was in this wood, and we used this wood fire stove. It was ridiculous, actually. So when my season, when this season ends in 2 weeks, I'm going to head back there for about a week and just, spend time with them and do another apprenticeship, which is a lot of fun.
Can we expect you to take these skills and maybe open up a steakhouse in the States somewhere?
Potentially. I mean, it's not a bad idea. Every person I talk to about the food, restaurant industry always tells me not to get in the restaurant industry. So I don't know. I mean, a restaurant could be a good idea, but I don't know if that's the path I want to take. I'm kind of, my feet are moving really fast right now. So I don't know if I could settle down in one spot and, do a restaurant. Maybe I would invest in some restaurants, but, I don't know. We'll have to see. My future is, very wide, very open. So I don't, I'm sure I have a lot of opportunities, but I just don't know what yet.
Gotcha. If you want to partner on this idea, I mean, especially with someone who owns an Israeli passport and an Italian passport, the name Mozzarella as a restaurant title. I should get this copyrighted or, patented or something, but
That's
Mozzarella.
Great.
Maybe that some Jewish great. Italian fusion,
That's actually not a bad idea. Like, there's not a lot of Italian Israeli. Yeah, that could work. We need to copyright that fast.
That would be wow. I think we just stumbled upon our billion-dollar idea.
Yeah, right there. It's actually funny. My point guard is Israeli, and for Passover, he's like, "Oh, you want some matzot?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." Stu brings me 3 pounds of matzah from Israel. One of them is like these handmade legit matzahs, and then another one's this 2-pound box of the square matzah. And he's like, "Here," I'm like, "What am I going to do with 3 pounds of like matzah? I love matzah, but so now I have all these matzah in my house." I'm down to about 2 pounds. I've ate about a pound of matzah so far, but I need someone to come. And Italian people don't want to eat. Like, if you didn't grow up on matzah, you're not eating matzah later on. Matzah is not like a thing where you're like, know what? I'm gonna make the move to matzah now. It's time. No, you need to grow up on matzah. Passover, you find the afikomen. You put cream cheese on your. What's your preferable matzah form of consumption?
I mean, late if it's like late night, you can make some matzah pizza. But I'm more of a matzah fry guy. A little fried salami in there. Make some matzah braai.
I've never heard of this. Also, fried salami. I mean, I can't think of a more blasphemous thing to do.
No, beef salami, of course.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of matzah braai, fried salami on matzah before. That's something new.
Matzah braai is a solid recipe. It's I mean, you just have to get so creative because matzah is just so bland.
It's cardboard. It's not an easy thing to eat. It's heavy. It's not the best taste in the world if you're not used to it. For me, it's just I'm eating memories.
Yeah. So I was gonna say I don't even think homeless people in Italy take the matzah.
With my leftover matzah, I'll get in my car, before I have to fly out of here, and just hand out the matzah to the homeless people. Cause like there's all these guys outside the grocery stores here asking for money. And every time I leave, they're always like, "Job boss, hey, you want some matzah, bro?" They're like, "Get this shit out of here, man. I don't want this."
There's no way that, they might actually fight you for even trying to give it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not trying to get in a fight with like a bunch of homeless guys outside a grocery store over some matzah.
Hey, Spool, speaking of fights, I took to Twitter for a couple questions and
Twitter fingers, here we go.
And Ben Kranka, sent a tweet in. He wanted me to ask you about, could you elaborate on the fight you had with Sam Martin back in Worcester Academy days?
That was my second fight of my life. So, and the first one for me was about 5 seconds long and it didn't end well in high school. So Worcester Academy, the year is 2007. I forget what it was over, but we had just got done with pickup basketball, after school. And I don't know what had happened because this was 11 years ago, but Sam Martin, love him to death. You know, Yale grad, I think he's living in Boston now. He's a lawyer. I actually saw him this past summer, looking good. But we got into an argument over something. I don't remember. The only thing I remember from this fight is he took my black Razor phone and threw it against a locker. And I lost, and I had it like the case for my Razor phone was this. It was also like the clip that I used. I used to keep my Razor phone clipped on my belt, you know?
Real cool.
Yeah, of course. So thank goodness I had this clip on my Razor, or else the phone would have completely smashed against the locker. So he chucks it against the locker, and I just looked at him and just like tackled him on the ground. And Ben Cranker, the whole team was in there. And I remember Bill Clark, who's, you know, Redondo Beach's finest. He was like, yo, let them fight. Let them fight. So me and Sam are rolling around on the ground. No punches are thrown because, you know, you don't touch the face. And I remember I ended up on top of him, but it wasn't like he wasn't flat on the ground. I ended up, his legs were folded like forward, you know, like over his head. He was kind of like, you know how you stretch down to touch your toes? Imagine that position, but he was on his back. And so his legs, I was on top of his legs, pushing down on him. You know what I mean? I kind of folded him in half. I just look him in the face. I'm like, are you done? You want to be done? And he goes, yeah, I want to be done. And then that was it. I picked up my phone. The screen wasn't broken. And then, I don't know, we've just moved on. I like to think that I made a man out of him after that fight, though. It was, actually, I will say, Ben Cranka, if it wasn't for him, I probably wouldn't be playing basketball professionally today.
Really? Well, I'd love to hear this.
Yes. So, Worcester Academy, like, I get there as a PG. I was a starter. You know, there was this big 6'10 bear sophomore from Rhode Island, and it's Ben Cranka. And I'm like, oh, crap, this guy. And throughout the year, he started improving, getting better. And he eventually took my starting position. I was coming off the bench for like one or two games. Then what happened was in the younger boys' dorm, there was a fight, like a pillow fight or something like that. And Ben Cranka got hit in the eye with a flip flop from one of the soccer players, and it like damaged his retina, and he couldn't play anymore. And I got my starting position back and like had a really good season. But if that had never happened, if he had never damaged his eye, I probably would have come off the bench and like not played as well during the season. And I probably wouldn't have gone Division I, and I probably wouldn't have gone to the Maccabi games, and I probably wouldn't like be playing professional right now.
No, of course. Yeah. Especially, if you're coming off the bench, you don't get as many minutes.
Right. Yeah. I probably would have been some Jamoke playing, you know, D2 somewhere. And then, I don't know, I'd be a restaurant manager right now.
You'd be playing men's league, you know?
Like, yeah, some beer league in, like, Worcester.
Oh, that's too funny. So
thank you, Ben. Thank you, Ben, for that.
Shout out to Ben Cranka.
I appreciate your eye getting hurt.
Another question we got from Evan Field.
Oh, man, my man.
This is just the weirdest friendship. We, you know, you guys used to battle.
Oh my God, did we? That is the Malta mustache.
You guys used to battle, and we always laugh. Like, we'd be like, yo, like, you know, why are you, even our coaches, I think, were confused. Like, why are you guys chirping each other like so much? They're like, oh no, me and Dane are boys. Like,
yeah.
So please tell us about
it. No, I mean, for me, the type of player I am is, I'll knock you down and then I'll be the first person to come over and pick you up. And like, I'm not the most talented guy in the world. I just work hard, and I don't know. I'm not much of a shit talker because I don't have a game to back up my shit talking. So like, and just, you know, Evan's a really nice guy, and he's a good dude. And I don't know, I think it was like around junior. So once Marcus was gone, because I was dealing with Marcus my first 2 years or so, which wasn't fun. You know, he was a guarantee. He was a walking double double. I don't think he ever dunked on me, but whatever. Once he was gone, and then I just had to deal with Evan, who has one of the best up and under moves I've ever seen in my life. Instead of like shit talking, I make friends with the guy. It's almost like a better form of competition, because if you're nice to the person, then they like don't play as hard against you because you're friends. You know, it's not like they don't feel as obliged to like beat you. You know what I'm saying?
Of course, yeah.
And then like it just grew to the point where every time I saw Evan, I'd be like, "Oh, what's up, man?" And then we became boys. And you know, we've stayed in touch, but you know, every time we're at the free throw line, we're always just like chatting, you know. And I'm a pretty imposing guy, so if you look at me, it might seem like I'm talking shit, but I'm actually just like talking craziness. Like, yeah, I can't wait to eat chicken tenders after the game or something, you know.
Yeah, he was like, he wanted to know, he's like, can you ask him if he's gotten any meaner? Because I don't know how a guy that nice can survive playing overseas.
I would say the answer is yes. I have gotten meaner because I'm still nice to some people. An issue over here that stands out the most is flopping, and I do not take kindly to flopping. So as I've grown a little bit older, I've become less tolerant to bullshit on the court. So referees, flopping, just not things that aren't conducive with the way the game was meant to be played, I don't take very kindly. And like now I just don't give a shit. So I'll lay in on some people. Last week we played against a team, and they have a guy on their team who, he pretty much just gets paid to flop. And I put some of the highlights of that game on my story. He did a really bad soccer flop, and I put it on my story. And I actually launched some merch of like, you know, the t-shirts that say like stop snitching that are like a stop sign. So I just created stop flopping. It's a stop sign. And I've kind of like merged the anti-flopping things, but I'll yell at someone if they flop, because I'm a big guy, so I pick up fouls real easy, and it's not fair. It's not fair when people get rewarded for playing like soccer players. I don't appreciate that.
So that must really hit a nerve in Italy then. Like a lot of people are flopping.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's soccer culture. I mean, I don't blame them, but at the same point, it's like, come on, what are you doing? What, that's not. No. Even the referees are like, you're stronger than him. So what does that mean? Like, I don't care that I'm stronger than him. He falls down. Like, so that's an issue. That's
not the American East anymore. Where
it's No. You're not dealing with guys like, I don't even remember, but it's the physicality is a lot different here.
For sure. Nice. So now, let's talk about, let's wrap it up and we'll talk about, you know, your career at UNH. I mean, for me as a Vermonter, you know, as a former Vermont player, you guys had such an odd environment. Like it was, because some years you guys, like I always pictured you guys were always like pretty good, but with a combination of like never having anyone in the stands almost. And we would always, for some reason, like we made it a day trip to play you guys at
different
times. So it was almost like we were just scrimmaging. Cause like, as a college player, like if you don't stay if it's in the away game and you don't stay in a hotel the night before, like it feels very different.
Right. Yeah. It's not.
So it was so odd. Like we'd get there, like we would get late or something. We'd be late and then be like, okay, we have 45 minutes before the game. And then like they would just be like no one there besides like our parents. Like I was wondering, like
the only games where we got fans is when the school was giving something away. I think like one of the games they're like free books for a semester and everyone showed up for the first half. Cause at the second half they called the name out and everyone left. Or if they were like giving out t-shirts or something, people would show up for that. Yeah, we only averaged like 1,100 fans. Here's the thing about New Hampshire is like it's a hockey school. Like it's, you know, I'm not going to deny that. And then if you take away hockey, it's a football school. I'm not going to deny that either. So we're the third sport. You know,
yeah, actually, you who was the football coach? Was it Chip Kelly?
Chip Kelly was there. Yep. Well, my freshman year, he was there and then he left. Yeah, Chip Kelly was, and then I think he went to Oregon.
That's nuts.
After that, but it's funny because, like, on my visit, you know, I went from Worcester Academy. The first thing they do is they bring you into the Whittemore Center, which is the huge arena where the hockey team plays. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh shit, look at this! This is new. It's nice. It's a really big arena. And they're like, yeah, we'll get a couple games in here. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I sign at the school. And I get there and I find out, oh yeah, the basketball court for the Witt, they sold it like 3 years ago. Didn't play one game in the Whittemore Center. We were in the field house, which is like half the people, like the practice, like, which is like, it looks like some team's practice gym. And, oh, all right. I mean, okay. So that's a great way to start off right there. You're tricking kids, whatever. We were dogs on defense. We worked really hard. Coach Herrien always stressed to us that he wanted to be number one in the league for, like opponent field goal percentage, like percent field goal defense or whatever. Yeah. We never had the talent to like blow teams out and stuff. You know, it was strange. It was, you know, I was just used as a pick and roll defender guy. I mean, who am I to talk? I had no talent. I had no hands. I didn't know what I was doing. I was like, I was more concerned about, I don't even like my motorcycle, like on campus and stuff like that. Like I just,
you had a motorcycle on campus.
Yeah. So in like New Hampshire, there's no helmet law. So like, my junior and senior year, I bought this 1976 like Honda 125. It was this antique motorcycle. It was awesome. It was unbelievable. It was bright red. And like I would just cruise around campus in my Ray-Bans and that's it. Only have Ray-Bans on, no helmet. And on the court, I just always distracted by something else going on, whether my girlfriend was breaking up with me or just something completely non-basketball. And like, yeah, I blame myself, but at the same point, like, I don't know. I wasn't easy to deal with, but I know I improved by my senior year. Mm-hmm.
Did Coach know you had a motorcycle?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Of course.
Didn't say anything to you.
No. So like right now at UNH, I'm pretty sure there's a huge culture for like those motor scooters, essentially. Mm-hmm. But don't think when I say motorcycle, I didn't have like a Harley. It was like a mini bike, really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my sophomore going into junior year, I don't care anyone who listens to this. I'm taking credit for it with another guy who was on the hockey team, Bobby Butler. We started the scooter culture, the scooter movement. He had a scooter early. I had my Honda. And then all of a sudden, like the rest of the hockey team, the field hockey team, some football players, all these people start getting scooters. And like the field house, which is where basketball and football play is, not the arena for hockey, the field house is just lined up with scooters. And it was just part of the culture. Like the coaches couldn't say anything because every athlete by the end of my senior year had some form of two-wheeled mode of transportation. I had the coolest, you know, scooter motorcycle, obviously, this antique Honda that you had, like, there was no start button. You had to kick it to start it. It was like one of those like dirt bike starters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. I'm so mad. I sold that thing. I bought it for $800. I sold it for $1,100. I made money to ride it for 2.5 uh-huh. years. But,
We had a kid on our team. Yeah, he definitely played after you, Cannon Rusin,
Does he have a sister who played?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so he came in as a transfer, and he was redshirting, obviously. And so he basically showed up to practice And I think he didn't know where to park his like motorcycle. And like, I don't know what he did. If like one time he basically either walked it in or something, like he left his helmet out.
That's so good.
Like he either left his helmet out or like the motorcycle in like one of the side rooms of our locker room or something. Cause like, I think our coach walked in and was like, I think Becker was like, yo, who the fuck's riding a motorcycle? And then like, Cannon is like, oh, that's me, coach. And then like, he was like, you're kidding, right? what world do you think it's okay, just because you can't play this year, that you're just going to ride a motorcycle around campus? Like,
yeah, I guess now thinking about it, like, especially with no helmet, like, so dangerous, so ill-advised. Dude, college athlete.
We went to school where it was like literally snow on the ground, like half of the
year. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I guess that was pretty dumb. It was so good though. Like, man, door-to-door service. Cause like my motorcycle was so small, you could park it right next to the door. You'd have to find a parking spot, man. I'm waking up like 5 minutes before class and I'd be there early. Cause you just go across campus and you park right next to the building, right next to the door. And then you walk right in and that's it. Like, it was so convenient. It was so easy. Like, and I mean, I don't know how much of UNH's campus you saw, but like, beautiful, beautiful campus, like, you know, pretty big. I mean, not that big, but it's, you know, it's perfect for a small motorcycle, essentially, that only goes 60 miles an hour. Yeah. So, I mean, it was in the spring at the end of my senior year after I was done playing, you know, I had just signed with an agent, man, I was chilling. Like, oh my God, that was so much fun. I would just like buzz around, hop from party to party on my motorcycle. Yeah, that was so much fun.
Oh man. All right. That's a great story, actually. I wish we could have, we might have to pull up some of those photos of you playing in a red, riding a red mini bike.
I don't know if I have any pictures of me. I know I have a picture of it somewhere. Yeah, this is like before Instagram was like a thing. So people like in 2011 weren't like taking a ton of pictures, you know, like if you took pictures, you put it on your face, like a Facebook album or something, you know? Yeah. So, I'm going to have to check into the files. Cause I do have a lot of pictures from way back when. So I'll have to
dive into the archives right there.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, that's too funny. So anything else about UNH besides that?
I mean, UNH is a great school. I just, you know, I had a good time there. You know, perfect little college town. But, you know, if you're going there for basketball and you're expecting to be like treated like a king, don't. UNH is not. No, just no. It's just not. Like, and like, it's funny, the Italians here are like, oh man, come on, like, you don't even have to work hard in school. Your teachers just let you go because you play basketball. And I'm like, not at UNH. Hell no. There was not one like situation. Well, there may be one, but like, we had to work hard in class. There was no one doing my homework. There was no teachers like helping me out by like, you know, boosting our grades or anything like that. Like, you don't understand. Like, we're Division I, but we're as low as it gets, man. Like,
yeah, there's none of that at the America East. None of that.
I don't think we ever. Okay, this is embarrassing. We never. My class never had a 500 season, and we were at the time the winningest class in school history. Come on, like. We played UConn. We played that UConn game my senior year. We ended up losing by 4. Man, we came back to campus. They were about to throw us a parade. Like, it was, I'm like, yo, we lost. What are you talking about? People were like, man, great job. Great. That's so nice. Like, what are you talking? We lost. Like, we didn't even win. If we won, they would have like made it UNH basketball day or something.
Yeah.
We had a parade.
Makes me think, like, the UMBC's campus is probably still partying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, those kids are – yeah. And that one kid, he might get some summer league looks.
Yeah, the kid Lyles. He's
yeah. Good. Did you play against him?
I don't think so, because he transferred a couple times, so I don't think I mean, yeah. he originally, I think he started at VCU. It's not like he's just some, like...
Oh, he's, like, know, not some chump off the street, yeah.
Yeah, like, he just transferred a couple times, like... I mean, I consider VCU, like, high major now, so... Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, that's crazy, like, especially... And, like, we didn't even play against those guys. For me, like... And it's, you know, seeing you guys in the tournament and all that, but, like... Like, it's just, it would have been crazy for me to see a 16 that I played against during the year beat a 1. Like, I can't even imagine how the kids at school now think about that, you know?
It's, yeah, like, I can't even, so, like, we, you know, Vermont, like, basically dominated the league this year. And, like, they basically lost to that kid Lyles, you know, in the championship game. Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't. I'm not gonna lie. I don't even follow college basketball anymore.
Oh no, yeah, no, it's fine. I'm just saying, like, from, like, the Vermont team this year, like, it's got to be heartbreaking. Like,
yeah. But you guys have always been good. Like, it's like I'll say it again. Ever since, like, that Syracuse run, like, you guys have always been in the upper echelon of the league. You know, like, and it all takes is one moment like that to completely change your program. I'm curious to see what's going to happen with UMBC now. Like, they're probably going to bring in some pretty high level. I mean, for America East, some pretty high level kids, because now they're going to be in the spotlight at least for a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
so does that one win change the whole program?
I would say definitely, if the coach stays for the next couple of years, it definitely will. The only negative is, I mean, UMBC is just not, like, a great place to go to school.
It's like a commuter school. Like, that, like, when the Red Sox won my freshman year, there were, like, riots at my school. Like, people were, like, parading around campus. I don't even think that could have happened at UNH, because there was probably, like, 1,500 people on campus, you know? Like, they're...
Seriously.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's, like, you know, hats off to them. That's great. And I hope, you know, like I said, one little moment like that can change everything. So, you know, who knows? I mean, it's definitely a good recruiting weapon they have now.
No, for sure. Jeez. Before I forget, we need to discuss that the cold tub picture you sent me. Let me set the stage for this. As I'm, you know, we're setting this podcast up. He says, "Oh, I'm in the ice bath right now. Like, when I finish up." It was a picture of what looked like to be frozen water bottles in a tub.
So, yeah, I mean, our ice machine's not that big, and, you know, guys need bags of ice after practice. So next to our ice machine, we have, like, one of those chest freezers, you know, like those restaurant freezers that you can open up from the top. And it's those European 2-liter water bottle, because, like, no one drinks from the tap here. They drink out of water bottles. So they have those 2-liter water bottles just filled up that we have from practice. And there's probably about 30 of them in this chest freezer. And they just get thrown back in there every day after practice. And then we do have like a little tub, not a tub. It's like a jacuzzi sized thing that they fill up, and then we put the water bottles in there and then sprinkle some ice in, and hopefully you'll be ready by tomorrow. That, you know, that's the small amount of recovery we have.
Oh, geez. That's too fun.
But, yeah, it's not, like I said,
improvised.
Playing in Europe is not, you know, we don't have, like, some, high technological, you know, system like the Celtics have or anything like that. It's just,
yeah,
frozen water bottles.
Let's get one more question in before I let you go. Give me another, like, cultural difference that you've been, like, where you just have to, like, look around and you're like, where am I? Or, like, I can't believe they're doing this. Like, I mean, I heard
it's just like
smoke at halftime.
Man, like, I would say 50% of my teammates throughout my career have been smokers. This, like, well, you're saying, do the teammates smoke or do people?
Because,
like, smoking in Italy in general is a problem. So I always say, like, in America, people don't eat high quality food, so we're all fat and stuff. In Italy, the one thing that they have is everybody smokes. Yeah. Like, I'm single right now. Like, I'll meet a girl, I think she's cool, whatever. And then, like, she pulls out a cigarette and it's like, oh my God, not you too. And then she's done, you know, then I cancel her. But, Yeah, I mean, it's just part of the culture, and it's just so ingrained. Yeah, I mean, I have had teammates that smoked. It's just like, you know, after games and stuff like that. I don't know about smoking at halftime. That would be very difficult to get away with.
That's ballsy.
But, you know, just there's just a lot of ass backwards stuff that goes on. Just nonsensical things, you know, that really just don't make sense to me. That, you know, also bidet, like the bidet here is a very strange thing that people use. Yeah. The other day I was walking right before practice. I was, you know, going to go to the bathroom, and there's this one bathroom that's kind of off to the side in the arena. And like, so I walk in, it's right next to the hydrotherapy room, and all the lights are off. This room is completely dark. Like, I had to use my my phone flashlight, and I don't know why I'm telling you this story. And I walk in, and I like, there's no lock on this bathroom door, but like, I mean, you know, if someone's in there, and I kick it open, and one of my teammates, one of the young, like skinny big guys, he's the toilet is vacant. There's no one sitting on the toilet. He's sitting on the bidet, completely naked. Just like, I don't even know. I don't understand how a bidet works, but he was like spraying the bidet into his ass. I'm like, yo, oh my God. And I just slammed the door shut. But like, yeah, the bidet is another thing. My rookie year, when I first got my apartment, I thought I had a bidet directly across my toilet, and I thought it was a receptacle to wash your hands as you were taking a shit. So for 9 months, I was washing my hands like before I caught up in this. I had like a hand soap there, and then I realized it's for like spraying into your asshole.
Oh my God.
So yeah, that's now everyone funny. Knows. Now everyone knows. There you
live
go.
And you learn, though. Live and you learn.
Yeah, yeah. You live. Now I know. Now I know. I can identify a bidet when I see one.
Oh, that's too funny. Oh man. All right. Yes, that should be good. We can.
That's enough of that. That is enough of that. We have hit capacity.
Well, all right. Well, Dane, appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, yeah. This has been great. This is a prize. This got set up like 2 days ago. I didn't even know I was coming on. This has been great.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.